If you follow through the logical arguments of the Skonic system, you are led to the conclusion that our minds can't think in a productive or useful way about God. If by God you mean the Bayesian Orthodox God, which is clearly not spatial-temporal, not existing in space and time, that is. But God exists everywhere and in all times, Beller said. But what does it really mean to say that? Your God is more than this road and that mountain and all the other physical objects in the universe put together, isn't he?
Sure, of course. Otherwise, we'd just be nature worshippers or something.
So it's crucial to your definition of God that he is more than just a big pile of stuff.
Of course.
Well, that more is by definition outside of space or time, and the Skonics demonstrated that we simply cannot think in a useful way about anything that in principle can't be experienced through our senses.
And I can already see from the look on your face that you don't agree.
I don't,
Beller affirmed. But that's beside the point. The point is that, after the Skonics, the kinds of people who did theorics and metatheorics stopped talking about God and certain other topics, such as free will and what existed before the universe. And that is what I mean by the Skonic discipline. By the time of the reconstitution, it had become ingrained. It was incorporated into our discipline without much discussion, or even conscious awareness.
Well, but with all the free time you've got sitting there in your conscience, couldn't someone be troubled in 4,000 years to be aware of it? To discuss it?
We have less free time than you imagine, Archibald said gently. But nevertheless, many people have devoted much thought to the matter and founded orders devoted to denying God or believing in him, and currents have surged back and forth in and among the maths. But none of it seems to have moved us away from the basic position of the Skonics.
Do you believe in God?
Beller asked, flat out. I leaned forward, fascinated. I have been reading a lot lately about things that are non-spatial-temporal, yet believed to exist. By this I knew he meant mathematical objects in the Hylian theoric world.
Doesn't that go against the Skonic discipline?
Beller asked. Yes, Archibald said. But that is perfectly all right, as long as one isn't going about it in a naive way, as if Lady Barrow had never written a word. A common complaint made about the Skonics is that they didn't know much about pure theorics. Many theoricians, looking at Barrow's works, say, wait just a minute, there's something missing here. We can relate directly to non-spatial temporal objects when we prove theorems and so on. The stuff I've been reading lately is all about that.
So you can see God by doing theorics?
Not God, Archibald said. Not a God that any Ark would recognize. After that, he managed to change the subject. He, like I, had been wondering what the powers that be might have told Furman and the others when they had put out the call for volunteers. The answer seemed to be, not much. The secular power needed some sort of puzzle solved, the sort of thing that Avout were good at. Some frauds and sewers would have to be moved from point A to point B so that they could work on this conundrum. People like Furman Beller were naturally curious about us. They had all learned about the reconstitution in their suvens, and they understood that we had an assigned role to play, however sporadically, in making their civilization work. They were fascinated to see the mechanism being invoked at least once in their lives and were proud to be a part of it, even if they hadn't a clue as to why it was being engaged. In the hottest part of the afternoon, we pulled off into the shade of a line of trees that had once served as windbreak for a farm compound, now collapsed. We hadn't seen Crade in hours, but Cord's Fetch was right behind us. Some of us walked around and some dozed. The mountains darkened the northwestern sky, though if you didn't know what they were, you might mistake them for a storm front. On their opposite slope, they caught most of the moisture blowing in from the ocean and funneled it into the river that ran through our consent. Consequently, this side was arid. Only bunch grass and low fragrant shrubs would grow here of their own accord. From age to age, the secular power would irrigate it and people would live here growing grain and legumes, but we were now on the wane of such a cycle, as was obvious from the condition of the roads, the farmsteads, and what were shown on the cartabla as towns. The old irrigation ditches were fouled by whatever would grow in them, which was mostly things with thorns, spines, and detachable burrs. Leo and I went for a brisk walk along one of these, but we didn't say much as we were keeping an eye out for snakes. Saman kept looking as if he had something to say. We decided on a shake-up that put me and him in Cord's fetch, while Leo and Barb went to Furman's Mob. Barb wanted to stay with Jad, but we all knew that Jad must be getting a little weary of his company, and so we insisted. Cord was tired of driving, so Rosk took the controls.
Furman Bellu is communicating with a Bayesian installation on one of those mountains, Saman told me.
This was an odd phrasing, since Baz had been sacked 5,200 years ago.
As in Bayesian Orthodox? I asked.
Saman rolled his eyes.
Yes.
A religious institution?
Or something.
How do you know this?
Never mind. I just thought you might want to know that Ganeliel Craid isn't the only one with an agenda.
I considered asking Saman what his agenda was, but decided to let it drop. He was probably wondering how a bunch of Bayesian priests would treat an Eta. My agenda was looking at the photomnemonic tablet, which I knew that everyone in this vehicle, except for Cord, who'd been driving, must have been studying. I'd only had a brief look at it before. Cord and I sat together in the back. The sun was shining in, so we threw a blanket over our heads and huddled in the dark like a couple of kids playing campout.